All right. Hello and welcome to the Crypto Explorer. It's a podcast by Sygnum Bank designed to bring you closer to the world of crypto and to the future of finance. I'm your host, Alia Dasgupta, and today our episode is a little bit out of the ordinary. For one, I'm very happy to invite our single guest to the studio today, Katlyn Tischhauser, who leads all the asset management research from Sygnum. But also, this episode is really designed to kind of look at the year ahead, to look at 2023, to see a little bit where we came from, what was important, what we should really take away from that, and a little bit into where we're going. So with that, I don't want to waste any time because we have an expert with us. Maybe a quick introduction from you, Katlyn.
Sure. Thank you very much, Alia. You actually already introduced me. So Katlyn Tischhauser, Head of Research at Sygnum.
Perfect. And the thing is, we're putting out a report. And this is a podcast that helps you maybe get an understanding of what's in that report. But also, if you can't be bothered to read the entire report, Katlyn's kind of summarizing the key takeaways for us today. So my first question to you is, looking at the year ahead, the year that was, they call it Annus Horribilis. What are your key takeaways from 2022?
Yeah, so it really was quite a year and quite an unusual year. Quite a few things that one could list that was surprising, or things that maybe were not surprising but very unpleasant. But let me pick a few. So one was that the year actually already, the end of the previous year, started with this narrative shift. For previously, for about a year or two, the only thing you could hear in the crypto media and the mainstream media is crypto is a macro hedge, that corporate treasuries were buying crypto as a hedge because the macro was looking rather fragile, which it now looks even more fragile than it did then. So if you needed a macro hedge then, you really need a macro hedge now. And all the sort of so many opinion formers and prominent voices were all repeating this narrative, crypto is a macro hedge. And then the narrative changed to crypto is a risk asset almost overnight. This definitely was surprising and very strange. And if you pick up the timeline of what happened when, the narrative of crypto is a risk asset appeared in the media before crypto started behaving as a risk asset, let's say. So the narrative actually preceded crypto behaving in a correlated manner with risk asset classes such as equities by about a week and a half or 2 weeks. And consequently, a large part of the year, macro hedge funds and prop trading desks primarily were trading crypto as a macro proxy. So it definitely was the case for actually some time into the year before actually crypto-specific news hit the radar that the market was moving very much with the macro. Actually, at the time, a lot of market voices, including ours, were pointing to all the crypto fundamentals that at the beginning of last year were still very, very, very strong, carried on from the previous year, the user growth, the number of use cases, the institutional buildup, and so on and so forth. And also that crypto venture was actually, it remained very, very bullish, unlike the secondary market. It also created this, it was actually a very unusual situation that the primary markets go in a totally different direction to the secondary markets, like so crypto venture versus the crypto market at the beginning of the year were pulling in opposite directions. And a lot of people kind of pointed to crypto venture as the real fundamentals of crypto. And actually this tension got resolved after kind of calls for decoupling, the fundamentals point differently, this doesn't make sense, crypto will decouple. Crypto actually did decouple, but unfortunately to the downside as various shock events occurred in the market. And it started with the failure of Terra, and from then it cascaded. It actually, almost everything followed from the failure of Terra. And that is not to say that there weren't non-transparent centralized entities that were over-leveraged, poorly risk-managed, some of them downright fraudulent, that were primed for a collapse, or that even within crypto, there weren't certain business models that were still immature, experimental, and weak, and could certainly suffer in a decline of the market. So that all existed in the background, but you can still trace everything back to the collapse of Terra. It caused losses at centralized lenders, their failure caused losses at other lenders, and so on and so forth, and eventually culminating in the collapse. In the collapse of FTX.
Absolutely.
So this was sort of one overarching trend that I wanted to mention, that actually last year the big market moves, both to the upside and to the downside, very few to the upside, but the Ethereum merge date announcement was one event that was to the upside. The big market moves were actually not macro correlated. Even last year, when there was such a push to repeat sort of the narrative, and certainly a lot of macro traders to some extent in a self-reinforcing way trading crypto as a macro proxy.
So I would look at this almost as two things. One was to see how the narrative changed, where crypto was no longer seen as a macro hedge, but as a risk on asset class completely. The second point you made was actually about the fundamentals of crypto, which saw sort of where the daisy chain began of all the implosions we saw last year, where it began a little bit with Terra, and from there all the different sort of players in the market that sort of washed themselves out. Then to the third point.
Yeah, so actually, if I could carry on from what you just mentioned, sure. That actually these collapses that were very traumatic for I would say most investors in the market and most market participants, including ourselves, it was a very hard year. A lot of these events. Could be traced back to bad actors, and a lot of them bad actors in centralized in private corporations, so traditional entities rather than decentralized entities. In fact, if anything, the decentralized infrastructure didn't break. It didn't have to be bailed out. It operated as it said on the tin. It was transparent and resilient. The year actually was a very strong proof point for decentralization, transparency, and the ethos of crypto. And the collapses came from centralized entities. And that includes actually the starting event, the Terra collapse, which now it was rumored very much at the time. Now it is investigated by the Department of Justice that actually FTX caused the collapse of Terra through market manipulation.
Sure.
That not just centralized entities, but I would also say it was also a failure of regulation, what we saw last year. The entities that failed were regulated. FTX had a large dozens and dozens of regulatory licenses, including a MiFID license, 3 CFTC licenses, did not have a FIMA license, were rejected by FIMA. Being in Switzerland, I say that with some pride, but basically they had a host of regulatory licenses, frequent meetings in the White House with Gary Gensler. This happened under regulators' noses, so this wasn't a failure of crypto, this was a failure of regulation.
Wow, that's a strong statement to make, especially when you consider how the regulators are going to come much harder for crypto now. We're seeing that already a little bit. But before we jump to what to expect in the year ahead, maybe we can spend a few minutes talking about what hasn't changed. It feels like 2022 completely turned upside down the way crypto works and the way crypto is perceived. But actually, a lot of the things maybe aren't that different. And maybe you could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, so a lot of the opportunity has not changed at all. So the opportunity for the technology to deliver tremendous savings and reduce friction across the economy, basically trustless systems are very valuable. And the invention of how technology can create trustless systems was potentially transformational for the world, and this has not yet been realized. This is still in very early stages. Basically, every system where you have to trust creates necessarily a lot of middlemen, a lot of friction, delay, and cost, and that just gets compounded. Then it has to be overseen and regulated, and transparency is better regulation than regulation, right? And so there's the cost savings and time and efficiency and so on, but there is also the incentives that centralized systems provide. There's basically, especially when they grow, the incentives at the top of systems, the power is quite significant, and there's the incentive for how shall I put it diplomatically, abuse is quite common. Because of the way the incentive structures are stacked, and lower down in these organizations, disengagement is common. So people are not really bought into, they're not really aligned, they have nothing to gain from the good performance of the system, and they act in self-serving ways or kind of negligent, disinterested ways. And this always happens in large centralized bureaucratic systems. So if you can achieve decentralization in a way that it actually works, which is what the whole crypto industry is working on, it's both a better alignment with human nature and human incentives, and also tremendous cost and efficiency savings.
Definitely.
So that for sure hasn't changed this opportunity. And then this is, I'm saying it in a very macro, in a very macro way right now, but you can translate it into every little use case. What does that mean for the decentralized internet? What does that mean for decentralized social media? What does that mean for the decentralized metaverse or gaming or decentralized data storage? So this can be translated more specifically into every single use case, but the broad brush is that decentralized trustless systems are extremely valuable.
And that continues to be true no matter what the market is doing.
That if anything, last year's failures proved that what is valuable is if you can remedy that, if you have an alternative to opaque centralized counterparties where, you know, there is fraud and there is who knows what bad risk management, poor business practices, negligence. So it was, I think, a proof point for that. The other important thing that didn't change was that the institutional buildup that we saw in 2021, maybe starting in 2020, really accelerating in 2021, that hasn't stopped or even slowed down in 2022. It did not translate into fund flows into the crypto market
yet,
which was something right? Like that was an expectation for 2022, that one of the underpinnings of the bull case at the very beginning of last year was this expected institutional inflows on the back of the previous buildup of hiring and putting in place the systems and operations and headcount and staff and, you know, ready to go. And that this did not happen, that the cash flows did not happen in 2022 is of course understandable because it was a bear market. So that's sort of reason enough for people to hold back. But they continued building, they continued hiring very significant numbers of people, continued adding crypto to, you know, whatever the institution was. So payment providers, adding the facility and investment banks and investment houses, building capabilities. And that continued throughout 2022, which actually I would say was quite surprising. And it just means that this institutional fund flow heading towards the crypto market is still very much on its way.
What are examples in your mind of this institutional commitment? Who are players that are doing something cool?
Oh, like literally everyone from, you know, even the ones that, you know, all the sort of major investment banks and investment houses, and even the ones that were serious detractors like JP Morgan or BlackRock, you know, in the past year, they have been building and they have been doing various things with crypto and on the blockchain and made various positive comments. I know Jamie Dimon recently made a negative comment
again.
specifically about Bitcoin, but generally, but at the same time, JP Morgan has been building a lot of crypto capability and have been doing, for example, a landmark transaction of tokenizing for an exchange and trading it with DBS. So they're definitely all in that regard. And, you know, Goldman, Morgan Stanley, Fidelity, on and on.
Players so, like, I think, BNP Paribas and UBS, you see them doing something, who are much more conservative typically in the their outlook.
Right. You know, we write a market report once a month, and literally every month, I'm worried it must be boring for people, because one of the things we have to mention every month is the following list of institutions, you know, entered crypto or started building or continues building their crypto capabilities. So that has carried on despite the bear market, and that is going to translate into fund flows
in the coming next year. Do you think? I mean, when the funds are coming is always a question, right? And none of us have a crystal ball. But what do you see as potential price action? I mean, just without any, with all the caveats in place, right? Like, this is obviously not any kind of financial advice, but what do you feel the market is going to do?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously the institutions move last. They are not going to lead the market move. So they need the market trend to be established before they move. So the question is, when is the market turning and bottoming, or has it already done so, or are we now seeing at the time we're recording this, is this a dead cat bounce, or has this been now a turn in sentiment and a turn in the market? And it's very hard to say, obviously. What we can say is that there's been a lot of pent-up demand building in the market, and there's so many proof points of that. For example, we can, if we just watch the price action last year, that alone is very, very telling. In a normal bear market, what you see is that there is a shock event like Terra or Celsius or FTX, and there is a dramatic drop, obviously, as the market adjusts to the shock event. And afterwards, the prices keep drifting down. And as there's more negative news, the market kind of steps down. And in lack of news, the market just kind of basically drifts down until eventually it reaches a bottom. What we saw last year, if you look at the chart, is every time a negative surprise came, there was obviously a very sharp adjustment down immediately. And afterwards, the market just flatlined with very, very low volatility that was below equities, and in a very tight range, just moving sideways. And as the further negative news came out, so for example, in the last June contagion, as there were more and more names announced that were caught by the contagion, the market did not drop any further, and it just went in almost, if you step back a little bit, it looks like a flat line for a lot of last year. Kind of it just moves in a flat line, which basically shows.
Yeah. I actually read that there were some weeks that Bitcoin itself had less volatility than the British pound, for example, in a single week because of how flat the market actually stayed.
Yeah, totally. And that basically shows that there weren't sellers. There weren't sellers. The market adjusted to a very negative piece of news. That's rational. But after that, there were no sellers. Mm-hmm. A lot of investors who have been long invested in the market with conviction, they were not selling. If anything, they were averaging down, and they were adding, if they could, to their positions. The institutional buildup continued. And basically, demand was building. So I think we could see, even from the charts, but also from the various statements and also the institutional buildup, that demand continued building, putting a floor under the crypto market. And I think when sentiment is confirmed to have turned, I think that there'll be a lot of potential investors who will quickly get engaged.
Sure. All right, cool. We've spent some minutes now talking a little bit about where the markets come from, what sort of has been the key takeaways or what we've learned over 2022. But now going into 2023, what do you expect to be the key themes of the evolution in the crypto space?
Yes, so there's obviously the market direction, which is going to be significant. There is also, in terms of fundamentals, what's going on in the world. That's very significant. And I would say it's generally crypto positive. I don't want to go into too much detail. This is really a very deep rabbit hole. But as the fiat system is showing cracks and is looking rather fragile, and the new system that it appears, the only other system so far proposed that that central banks would like to maybe migrate the monetary system towards, which is CBDCs, is nowhere near ready to be launched, and it's facing a lot of resistance. And in between these two systems, crypto is an alternative. But we could talk about this quite a bit in terms of what's going on, you know, what's going on with the global macro. But that's one very important backdrop to the market. The other is the innovation that's going on the VC side. And generally, the crypto market is its usual anti-fragile, in its usual anti-fragile form. Really, almost all the projects and all the entities, you know, like ourselves, but basically the community responded with, we just have to build. We just have to go back to the drawing board, fix any kind of business models or any technological weaknesses, business model weaknesses, and we just have to keep innovating and keep building. So that's also a very strong underpinning for the market. Regulation is also going to be, so there's a lot around the market that is going to determine the overall opportunity set for the current year. And it could be very positive. It's definitely underpinned by a lot of potential demand and a lot of potential fundamentals that can be unlocked if the market starts powering forward again. But there's quite a lot in the environment that one has to pay attention to and think about. Within the crypto market, there are certain areas of the market that are particularly relevant currently. The move towards Web3, the decentralized internet, that's actually getting quite a lot of traction and different elements that catalyze it or allow that to happen. So, for example, decentralized data storage, all the decentralized elements that allow the internet to be decentralized hosting, decentralized bandwidth. These kinds of projects are showing a lot of growth and a lot of traction. Scalability is a huge theme still. There's a lot of innovation happening and yielding very, very good results. And it's very important because if crypto is to fulfill the dream as being a foundational technology for tomorrow's economy, scalability is extremely important. And already, crypto is pretty scalable. There have been very, very significant technological improvements, but there is more ground to cover if the metaverse is to be on the blockchain and certain use cases, especially, have very high requirements in terms of the number of sort of transactions that take place for that use case to function. So that is definitely a very important growth area. A couple of others to mention. So, for example, identity is becoming a very important issue. How to keep with data breaches and data protection issues, how to securely encode identity and hand it to the person so they can authorize and that they can communicate it without revealing the detail of the information that basically encrypted digital identity that can unlock a lot of further use cases in crypto is already a growth area, but I think that's going to see a lot of growth. Then the question is, what will happen to decentralized finance from this point forward? And there also, expanding the use case, so expanding the number of things that decentralized finance does or can do, can unlock a lot of growth. Fundamentally, decentralized finance worked a lot better last year than centralized finance, and that's a very good proof point, but there's the number of use cases of decentralized, for the product range, let's say, of decentralized finance is still quite narrow. So if that product range can expand, then that can be also very beneficial for growth. Another very important theme is that traditional corporations have started collaborations and alliances with Web3 projects. And that's across, Starbucks and Instagram and T-Mobile. So it's various types of collaborations, but these are very beneficial for the crypto projects for sure. They're probably beneficial for the Web2 or for the traditional companies as well, as in as the world transitions into a new paradigm in terms of technology, that they actually don't get left behind. But it's definitely very helpful for these projects, because that's instantly a ton of users migrated to that platform. When your Starbucks is partner and they sign up the Starbucks users onto your platform, that turbocharges the user growth. There's several more, but maybe just mention one more, and I could mention several more. But the NFTs as utilities, I think that's also a very interesting area. To use NFTs in ticketing and obviously domain names, that's already been growing very strong, but various non-art and non-avatar, but utility uses of NFTs.
What kind of utilities do you see coming out in 23?
Yeah, so for example, ticketing, I think, can be a huge opportunity for, and not just for events and travel and so on. It makes your ticket much more flexible and usable, and you can do so much more with it. The company selling you the ticket can so much more with it. So I think that's a very cool use case for NFTs specifically.
Awesome. I mean, there's clearly a lot of innovation happening kind of across the spectrum, but the sort of big elephant in the room is regulation. I wonder if you could talk a little bit to what you see evolving in the regulatory landscape in the coming year.
Yeah, so it's, regulators are moving ahead. They're bringing out regulation, and that was already happening. It's very good. It's clarifying when there's no regulation, or it's very unclear, or it's regulation by enforcement. Then that just creates regulatory risk, and it drives away projects to weak jurisdictions, which is what we have seen in the past, right? So FTX International was in the Bahamas, and many crypto projects sort of locate themselves in jurisdictions where the regulatory risk is not even, hopefully it's not, obviously FTX was fraud. A lot of the majority of crypto projects are not. But when there's tremendous regulatory risk in a certain jurisdiction, it's not prudent business to locate yourself in that jurisdiction. So by clarifying what the regulation is, certainly they're bringing down the regulatory risk. That is definitely happening. The question is, how will they regulate? And I see two factions, in particular in the US. I think other countries, especially smaller countries, are generally more crypto friendly, and their regulation is more about how to attract crypto to our jurisdiction, the UAE or Brazil or European countries as well, some of them, how to make regulation strong but crypto friendly, so we can become a crypto hub. But let's say if you look at the US regulators, I think it's a tussle between two camps, and one camp basically sees the decentralized economy as a threat to the centralized economy that they represent, and they want it gone. And maybe they can't have it gone, but they want the life regulated out of it by making it so onerous to comply with regulations that that it basically chokes the industry, banning certain things or making it so expensive or so cumbersome to comply that basically it's not economic to do business anymore. And then another camp, which has many, many lawmakers in the US, for example, in it, it wants to create regulation that is crypto friendly in the sense that it's suitable for this product. And I think generally shoehorning crypto, even already the question, is it a commodity or is it a security? Well, it's really neither. It is a new thing. And when you try to fit it into regulation that was not made for it, the regulation will not be very, very good. Just to give you one example, for example, when centralized corporations, for example, you go public or you have to list the securities that you wish to issue, well, that is because you're a non-transparent private corporation. Without making it compulsory to provide certain level of transparency, you cannot create, you don't put the investors into securities in a position to make a reasonable judgment about the investment. And also it has to be a level playing field. But all of this, and it's quite expensive, for example, to launch an IPO, because of the legal cost of complying with what you need to comply with are significant. And it also takes usually quite a long time to put it all together until, you can launch. And that's necessary when you're operating with opaque private entities. You have to tell them you are obliged to provide this information to the people who will be investing in the security you're issuing. In crypto, almost everything is transparent other than the anonymity of the users, but the transactions, all the transactions on the blockchain are completely transparent. So the requirements for what you have to disclose and what you don't have to disclose are actually they're unnecessary. They're, for the large part, don't even make sense. It's more just maybe making it clear how people can find the information, but the information is already public and it's available to everyone. So it actually requires a different kind of a framework to say, and if you impose, for example, all the disclosure requirements that you impose on securities issuance, you just make it so expensive and so onerous that you choke it off, right?
Yeah.
And it's unnecessary. So that's just one example, but basically, good regulation is fitted to crypto and the nature of the product, rather than argues about is crypto a commodity or a security when actually it's neither.
That's a really good point. And with that, I think we're out of time, but Catelyn, thank you so much for giving us that high-speed train ride through the report. For our listeners, if you want to read more about all the things Catelyn has talked about and to go a little bit more into depth into all the different topics we covered today, please find our report on the Signum website, and I will also link it into the show notes. And if you have any questions, you can always write in to podcast@signum.com. And until the next time, thank you again, Catelyn.
Thank you very much.
Have a nice day.